ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But we're now streaming not only on the Odyssey app, but you can also find us on the TuneIn Radio app as well as the iHeart Radio app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day.
Good day, Jeffrey. We have a schedule update.
All right.
If you guys want to come and hang out with me this evening. We are not doing trivia tonight at Dan McGinnis, or at least I'm not. We'll be hosting a little bit of music bingo up there at Slider Inn in Midtown. So come on down, have a good time, play a little bit of music bingo at Slider.
Slider Inn, baby. My co-host is he is each and every Thursday. He writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Good day, Jeffrey. How are you today?
I'm doing well, man. I'm kind of fired up. This feels like a pretty good weekend of hashtag ball.
Oh, no doubt. I am fired up for that Saturday night SEC quad box, which is going to be the perfect capper to a pretty solid day that also includes Clemson, Georgia Tech, Alabama, Wisconsin. Then you got a banger in the afternoon with Tennessee, Georgia.
Yep.
And then we're gonna cap it all off with four very interesting SEC games or games involving SEC teams. Obviously, Texas A&M, Notre Dame is a non-conference matchup. But we're going to learn a lot about that league on Saturday. And that to me, it's sort of the first kind of separation Saturday, if you will, where some teams will reveal themselves to be legit, and then some others will obviously be going in a much different direction.
Yeah, I feel like this Saturday is like a what are you weekend.
Yep.
Like, and so I'm very fascinated by pretty good also NFL slate, so we'll taste it here in just a moment. Eric Hastein's going to join us like he does each and every Thursday at 2:40. We'll get into the list at 3:05. Cobb's got new bosses, potentially. We can talk about that big merger because, I mean, basically now, if the merger goes through, Cobb, really the only thing that new venture wouldn't have is the NBA.
Yeah, it would be huge. So, obviously, Paramount is already merging with Skydance, but Skydance doesn't really dabble in live television sports rights.
Not anymore.
if they acquire Warner Bros. Discovery, as is rumored today, your Paramount Plus subscription is going to have even more bang for its buck if that happens.
And this just in, Paramount Plus just went up to $10.99 a month.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure we'll discuss that. As well as we got a gambling scandal that's perhaps rocking the college sports world. Then Jason Smith's going to join us at 3:30. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. All right, Cobb, so let's start with tonight. Just one college game, so that means we don't really need all four TVs. But let's start with, we've got the NFL game, so we've got Commanders and Packers, and then we've got NC State Wake Forest with a line that absolutely stinks because I think Wake might be like real, real bad. And I don't think NC State's that bad, but when I saw that line at minus seven, I was like, oh, well, this is a trap. I'm just going to spring the trap. But I was thinking that was going to be way closer to like NC State double digits.
Yeah, so Wake Forest barely beat Kennesaw State in week one. Barely. I think it was 10-9.
And Kennesaw State was driving.
Yeah, right. And then Kennesaw State the following week went out and lost like 56-7 or something to Indiana.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think Wake is very good. But don't put it past Dave Dorn.
No. This is a Dave Dorn spot. Or I can tell you what this could also be. This is one of those games where Dave could be up like 10 the whole game, but you know they're not going to cover. You know what I mean? Like you're just waiting for that Wake touchdown to make it a 3-point game, and then they don't get an onside kick, game over. Like I can just see that.
Well, without a doubt, it's Thursday night college football, and that I'm grateful for because the NFL has really, really taken the juice out of what used to be a really fun college football tradition. We used to have good games on Thursday night. We really don't anymore. I don't know that this is a great game, but it's a great game between two Power Four opponents.
It's interesting enough. You know what? I don't want this to be an anti-Tom Luganville thing. I just miss Matt Barry and Mullen.
Yeah.
I thought they had good chemistry. There was nothing like trying to figure out where they'd played golf that day, you know, and they'd show like the... And then we're also being deprived of the College Football Live segment where it's like, Dan, where's Dan going to eat today? Like, it was like Mullen eating food around the country. Like, one time, remember, he was like chugging a beer. We were watching that during the show.
Oh, yeah. They just had an absolute blast. Yeah, I was almost surprised that Dan Mullen wanted to give that up to go coach UNLV.
Yeah, catch the Rebels, baby. It is still so funny to me to hear him say he finishes every interview, go Rebels. Like, I think he's winking at the camera.
Well, it is ironic, weird, I don't know. What. But yeah, never would have thought in a million years we'd hear that. And then did you hear Gabe on yesterday talking to me? I guess Adam Rittenberg suggested that if Dan Mullen has a good first year at UNLV, which he is, that like perhaps there could be a reunion at Florida. Like what?
Oh, that would be hilarious. I had heard out in the ether that if the UCLA thing bottoms out, which I think we have to say at this point, it's on the table. Now, it's also important to note, UCLA did look really bad early last year, and they kind of like figured it out as the season went on, and they were competent. But I think it's entirely possible they're like clearly the worst team in the Big Ten.
So are you sending Dan Mullen to UCLA?
I've been told watch out for that one.
Oh, I don't know if Dan Mullen would be great on the West Coast, but sure, why not?
I think he would be perfect at pushing Lincoln's buttons.
Oh, that's true. That would be fun.
I am also not as convinced. If Dan's only going to get one more gig, I want it to be a good gig. I'm not sure the UCLA gig's a good gig.
I still think he's a good coach.
I do too.
The whole reason he got fired at Florida was because he's a bad recruiter. Well, the money recruits for you now. So if you go somewhere that has money, all you got to do is be a CEO and maybe a tactician, right? Like you can delegate the recruiting to.
He was in his bag last week. He was running.
Yeah, the crazy thing is he lost Alex Orji, but
I know.
That's always
in the cards. Dan will find a quarterback to run the ball 200 times a year, and it just so happened Alex's number was called, and he's, you know, I mean, he got hurt, but like Dan will do that with he will find a running quarterback and just run him into the ground.
Well, the other subplot to UNLV's 3-0 start is them beating UCLA, and now all this week, man, story after story from national outlets, and then just message after message from all my Tennessee buddies declaring after 2 weeks, Jeffrey, that Tennessee has definitively won the breakup with Nico Iamaliava. The jury is back.
Yep.
Never mind the Tennessee's played ETSU and a really bad Syracuse team. And never mind the fact that Nico has a garbage supporting cast around him. It's done. The verdict is in. We don't even need to see Tennessee play Georgia. The breakup was won by the Vols, or so everyone seems to think. I'm not exactly convinced of that. I think Georgia might have something to
Hold
say
on.
About this week. But
you mean to tell me the group chat might be putting the cart before the horse?
They are.
That does I'm not sound to, like my Tennessee friends.
I'm trying to calm them down. I'm doing my best, but they're just, you know, they're just mad that I have Aguilar at like 37 in the quarterback power rankings.
It's completely
fair. I've got Simpson in the 20s. This quarterback power rankings thing, like, you want to talk about engagement? Like, it makes everybody mad. Like, it makes everybody mad except for the team of the quarterback who's number one. But it's great. It's great engagement.
All right. So we also have tonight Packers and Commanders. I can just tell you, Cobb, this is going to be the classic. I'm just going to probably zig. The Packers looked awesome on Sunday, and the Commanders looked fine against the Giants, but they didn't need – like, the Commanders did the thing where it was very apparent early the Giants were not going to be able to score, and so they're like, all right, let's just not lose this, and they were, like, pretty safe. But they won handedly 21-6. I just think I'm going to be on the Commanders tonight. Like, this feels like a potential for Jaden. Like, all right, last year wasn't an illusion. It wasn't a mirage. Like, he's ready to enter the chat.
Yeah, going to Lambeau is never easy. I think Lambeau Field has got to be, like, you think about home field advantage, and what is that in the NFL from a betting perspective? I think it's more significant in college, but Lambeau Field to me is one of the few that I would say actually feels like a legitimate rowdy, like, difficult sort of place to play. So that factors into the way I look at that game as well.
I also think you have to factor in most of these NFL stadiums. Like, part of the deal, like, of trying to determine what is home field advantage is, like, well, so many of these games are at noon. Or, you know, whatever, 1 Eastern, noon. And, like, it's on a Sunday, it's kind of like a sleepy, hungover environment. But in these primetime games, like, that's what Joe Burrow keeps getting mad about, is every year his Baltimore game's a nighttime game. It's a primetime game at Baltimore. He's like, can we maybe get it reversed? Because, like, it's kind of miserable to go there at night.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then the other subplot tonight, you've got Micah Parsons against Dan Quinn.
Micah Parsons against Dan Quinn. Also, though, I've not heard. Has Cowherd given us any takes about Dan Quinn still wearing the backwards hat?
Right.
I know we did like the. I know Cowherd did like 30 minutes on Little Schottenheimer with the backwards visor. Is he just not firing off takes about Dan Quinn, or is Dan Quinn winning too much so he doesn't do the backwards hat take?
No, I think that's it. I think that's it. If you win enough, yeah, you can okay. Do it.
All right. All right, let's get to... Does anything interest you on Friday? Okay, so we got the Sycamore State battle, Indiana State and Indiana. It's 48.5. I can't wait to watch him try and score a late touchdown with, like, taking timeouts. Colgate at Syracuse. Syracuse on upset alert.
Maybe.
We've got...
If that were a basketball game.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm not sure. Maybe it might be in a football game. Colorado at Houston with... Did Deion finally admit he is playing his third quarterback?
Yeah. Can you explain the Martin Luther Staub joke to me? I've like totally missed the boat on that. I mean, Ryan Staub's the third string quarterback, and he's now the starter for Colorado. But, like, there's this meme going around out there that I don't get, calling him Martin Luther Staub.
George.
Beats me.
Okay.
Martin Luther Staub. So, I presume something, it has to be somehow related to the fact that he jumped both Caden and Julian.
Yeah, I don't get the joke. Anyway, that's a fascinating subplot to me, is that, like, you went out and got a highly regarded freshman quarterback to help replace Shedeur Sanders. Then you went out and also got Caden Salter, a well-respected, highly productive veteran quarterback who's been at Tennessee initially and then Liberty. Yet it's the guy who has been there since Carl Durrell was the head coach that is now stepping into the starting role. So what does Colorado look like? What is Colorado? That we're going to learn that on Friday night. That's a classic, as you say, show us who you are sort of moment.
Okay, George says he's found the genesis. This apparently goes back... for years.
I thought it was from this past weekend where Ryan Staub pretty much said, with Coach Prime next to him, I had a dream, I saw something and just wanted to chase it, getting into the game, and Coach Prime says, Martin Luther Staub.
Okay, there you go.
Which, okay. In that case, that's pretty good.
God.
That's pretty good. Coach Prime doing some work.
That's pretty good stuff.
I mean, I saw they did a little post-game interview together on the field. I guess I didn't have the sound on, but okay. Yeah, that's good. All right, Martin Luther Staub. Can he lead Colorado to a win at Houston? We'll see.
Here's what I want to give Deion credit. Number one, he has been very transparent about the stuff that everybody does, but at least he was willing to be honest about it in terms of the way they cut players, the way that, you know, I'm bringing Louis, all that. I don't know many coaches. I mean, what do you think the salary for his starter and his backup were? Probably $2 million.
Yeah, and he's going.
And he's turning to the kid that literally was third team, like as you said, literally a program guy.
Yeah, I don't think that belies confidence in Colorado. Like that makes me a little nervous.
No, but like I'm willing to tip my cap. Like that's kind of more of the pro mindset of like, hey, we know this guy's getting paid the most, but this is the guy that's going to help us win. And maybe he's going to end up being wrong. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, we just saw him against Delaware, so we don't know.
But yeah, I mean, I just give Coach Prime credit for still coaching at Colorado after his son, both of his sons are no longer part of the program. Like, you know, he's got these health issues going on. Like, and yeah, he's still coaching. Like, I kind of surprises me, but are they going to be good again? I don't know. They don't have Travis Hunter. They don't have Shador Sanders, whatever you think about the guy. And then Houston
Shador was a good college quarterback. That's not a controversial take. Like, should he have been the number one pick? Okay, that's where you start to get into it. But it's like, in terms of being a college football player, he was a good college quarterback.
Correct.
All right, so let's get to Kansas State at Arizona State, the Wildcat non-conference game. Or the non-conference game against conference opponents.
Yeah, Kansas State's down bad, man. They were a team everyone thought could win the Big 12. They're off to a 1-2 start. Yeah, tough situation for the Wildcats.
All right, let's get to Saturday. All right, so as mentioned, our ABC opener is Wisconsin at Alabama. Also at 11 a.m., we have Georgia Tech hosting Clemson. That's also the Oklahoma Temple window, the Oregon at Northwestern window, Memphis at Troy. That's on the U at 11.
Yeah, honestly, I'm actually excited because I can put Memphis and Troy in a pretty good spot in this window. I have not gotten to just sit down and watch a Memphis football game yet. I mean, I've seen highlights. You know, I've looked at all the box scores, right? But
yep,
this will be the first time that I actually like sit down and watch Memphis play.
I mean, they are in a fascinating spot because that line has dropped. I think at some places it's down to 3, Cobb. And I think opened.
I guess everybody's thinking, okay, Troy went on the road to Clemson and had them in their sights, and we're up at the break and stuff. And so, you know, Memphis is going on the road to their place. But I'm not convinced that Clemson wouldn't have played that poorly against anybody. I think that was more of a Clemson thing than anything.
I'm with you. And also, like, these two teams played last year, and it wasn't close. Like, I don't know. Jonah, Dylan, and I were talking about it yesterday. The line moved so much that I'm like, is somebody injured that I don't know about? Like, that was my first instinct. And Jonah was like, well, if you don't know, or he's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess Troy is getting a lot of credit for the fact that...
A statement loss?
I mean,
they did win the first half, Cop, outright. They won it on the field.
Yeah, I mean, so you're going up against Goose Crowder at quarterback. So he's on the all-name team in college football. I don't know, you know, how much that counts.
Not much. I also think Jared Parker's like a legitimately bad coach.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't be at all surprised if Memphis went out there and won this one fairly handily. Like, right. When I'm looking at the G5 before the season, Troy's not even on my radar. So, you know, I would think Memphis could go out there and win this game without much trouble.
All right, I'm going to start with TV1, Wisconsin and Alabama. I think the real question is there any way Wisconsin can make this interesting?
Yeah, I mean, defensively, they could pressure Ty Simpson, make him uncomfortable, win the turnover. But yeah, there's a path. There's absolutely a path for Wisconsin to make this interesting. But Wisconsin's offense is going to be – it's going to be tough sledding. I mean, they're playing a backup quarterback. What's his name? Danny something. Because they brought in Billy Edwards from Maryland.
McNeil or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, O'Neill. Yeah, I think it's Danny O'Neill.
Yeah. Sorry. I screwed up my Irish prefixes. I went O instead of Nick or Mick.
Yeah,
or I went with Mick.
He looked good though last week, but you know, now you're looking at a different situation here going to Alabama. So, no, I think there's a way for Wisconsin to stay in it. There's a way for Wisconsin to cover that spread, but it's all about making Ty Simpson uncomfortable. That's the only way that it happens, because if you don't do that, like, it's a Kalen DeBoer coached offense that has Ryan Williams and Jeremy Bernard, and they will go out and put 49 on you if you can't make them uncomfortable. So, you know, can Wisconsin get home? Can they make Caden Proctor look stupid like that freshman defensive end at Florida State did in week one? If they do, then yeah, they'll be in this game in the second half.
Alabama undefeated at home under DeBoer, also 6-2 against the number. All right, this was the other question at 11 a.m. before we get to 2:30, because 2:30 is where we start to get bangers only. Are we exploring the possibility? Like, I think we both agree it didn't feel like that there's a dominant team this year. I know Oklahoma State is bad. Are we at least open to the idea of maybe we just have ignored Oregon and Oregon actually is that team?
Yeah, no, I'm open to it. They've looked better than any of the supposed national title contenders so far. And you can look at the competition level and rightly say, wow, they beat bad teams. However, in week one, they put up 59 against a Montana State team that played for the FCS national title. Like, those Big Sky teams that are perennially in the FCS playoffs, they typically give just absolute fits to whatever Power Four team they play in week one. Oregon just went out and crushed them with no problem. Then you turn around and you hang 69 nice. on Oklahoma State. So, no, I'm open to it. I'm open to the fact that Oregon might just be a wagon.
Okay, so now let's go to 2:30, and let's start with the game that you can hear right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. The Tennessee Vols hosting the Georgia Bulldogs. This is my question for you, Cobb. How seriously are you entertaining the idea that Tennessee can win this game? I understand for everyone out there going, it's a 3.5-point spread. I know. I'm going to have to see Josh Heupel beat this defense for me to start to believe it. Because this is the same game script every single year, where Tennessee comes in riding pretty high. You think that Georgia might be gettable, and then Georgia just smushes them.
Yeah, I think this is one of those spots where, like, the home field advantage plays a massive, massive role. Neyland Stadium is going to be on fire for this game, and Gunnar Stockton has never started on the road before. So, yeah, Tennessee is down its top two corners. But there's not a more hostile place in college football to make your first start. I don't care. You go to LSU, Alabama. You're not talking about Neyland Stadium welcoming in Georgia. This is the last frontier, the last hurdle for Josh Heupel, for that fan base. They've beaten Florida. They've beaten Alabama. They've made the college football playoff. In terms of teams that are left on the list for Heupel to beat, Georgia's it. I mean,
Of the traditional common opponents, it's the only one he hasn't beaten, right?
Yeah, it's, so that environment is going to be worth – it might be worth a touchdown. I mean, you know, if this game were being played in Athens, I think it'd be Georgia, you know, minus 9.5 or something. So that's the big question for me. How does Gunnar Stockton handle Neyland Stadium, and a Neyland Stadium that's going to be as raucous and loud and electric as it ever has been?
Also at 2:30, we have – We have USC at Purdue. So I think I'm going to try and get me some of those Big Ten travel, like, give me the points. I think Barry will take away the explosives. And remember, we saw last year, it was like teams that were having to travel multiple time zones. I'm just kind of in that spot where it's like, maybe give me Purdue and the points. So congratulations, USC, for USC winning that game by 50. We also have the Backyard Brawl at 2:30. Iowa State goes on the road to Jonesboro to take on the Red Wolves at 3 p.m. That's ESPN2. And then Cobb at 3:30. I have seen reports potentially the highest rated viewing experience in the history of the CW. Miami hosting South Florida at 3:30 on the CW.
Dag nabbit, man. Why is this game on? That's the one channel I cannot find. I can't. Fubo has everything else you could imagine, except for CW.
Did you go to Walmart, get the digital antenna?
Man,
it comes in HD. It's actually great.
I don't live in the 90s like you do, man.
But the digital antenna gives you HD, and it's like you can watch all the network stuff. Now,
okay, Grandpa.
Swapping through your apps is going to be tough. But like, if you're talking side screen.
I will never purchase a digital antenna. Although I did take your advice last week, and I got a free trial of Sirius XM for my drive to and from Lexington. That was a game changer because I got to listen to the Mississippi State broadcast as they were winning that wild game against Arizona State, and it was just so great. Like as awesome as the TV crews are and the HD is, like there's just something unique about listening to the local broadcast. And man, that State broadcast, they were on fire. They were giving it to Kenny Dillingham, calling him out for all the stupid stuff he said about, you know, staying at a casino. You know, I mean, it was just, that was great.
Matt Wyatt was also yelling out, like, touchdown as they were, like, the final play was happening. So,
yes, before the play-by-play guy could even narrate it, the color guy had yelled out that it was a touchdown. And, like, yeah, that was fantastic. So, thank you for that suggestion, Jeffrey. Yep. But I am going to decline your recommendation that I go out and buy an antenna. Okay?
Here's another suggestion. Actually, this might be a command. Listen, I have decided that South Florida is going to be to me what Indiana was last year and what Arizona was in 2023. Like, I'm just going to keep betting against them and I'm going to keep losing. And I'm just going to be like, the number's wrong, the number's wrong, the number's wrong. If South Florida wins this game, they have to be the number one team in your CBS 136.
Wow. Okay.
Who would have three better wins?
I don't even think it's that crazy. I mean, I have them at 11 this week. And I mean, Gabe was kind of saying that was too low. And I mean, I don't totally disagree. And I just wrote this whole thing about the flaws in the AP voting system and how we reward brands and logos over achievements.
I do appreciate you talking about your logic and your process. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, so I still have Oregon, Penn State, and Georgia all ahead of South Florida, even though those three teams have not beaten anyone of significance because they haven't shown me that they're bad yet either. So, like, yeah, I got South Florida higher than the AP does, but I mean, you know what? I'll just do it. Yeah, if South Florida goes and beats Miami, they'll be number one in my CBS 136 ballot, like open and shut, ahead of Ohio State, ahead of, you know, whoever, doesn't matter.
And it doesn't mean they have to stay there forever. But like,
it's not a projection, yes. Right? Like, I think that's the problem that a lot of people who vote on college football polls, whatever poll it is, they are projecting what they think the landscape will look like in November rather than letting what's actually happened, you know, be the guiding force behind where they rank these teams. And that's when you run into these situations where morons still have Florida ranked or even ranked ahead of South Florida in some cases after South Florida beat Florida head to head. All right, maybe if it's November and Florida's 8-3 and South Florida pulls a fluky upset, sure, but this is week two. I mean, we've seen Florida beat Long Island University, and we had also already South Florida beat Boise State. So, yeah, I mean, I agree.
Heads up, Long Island beat Eastern Michigan.
I saw that.
And Eastern Michigan plays Kentucky this week.
So you're saying Kentucky might actually get to 30.
I'm saying, I also was wondering if God might have done Kentucky a favor with Calzada.
Oh, getting hurt? Yeah. Now they have to play Cutter Bowley. I mean,
the guy, listen, I'm sure he is going to be a YOLO ball guy. It was a noticeable difference when he got into the game throwing.
I was so confused because I was getting on the elevator to go down to the field for the last 5 minutes. And then I heard the PA guy go, and Cutter Bowley on the pass attempt. And I was like, huh? They pulled the starter with 4 minutes left in the game. That's bizarre. But then I realized he got hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, with a name like Cutter, you got to be able to cut it loose.
Yeah, you got to. That is a guy that has to throw into coverage. That's a guy that trusts his arm.
We need him to be Anthony Calandria to make Kentucky football interesting.
Yes, make it fun again. All right, starting at 6 p.m., we've got Arkansas at Ole Miss. We've got Austin Simmons drama. Injury drama. So, Cobb, you were there. Lane said he was cleared to go back into the game, but they were running the 4-minute offense, and they ran the clock out pretty well and got a field goal. So, mission accomplished. I'll do a Dan Patrick. My sources in Oxford tell me that it's very iffy if he plays, and that if they were to play today, he wasn't playing. I'm also of the opinion, until Lane stops trolling with the injury report, I'm going to assume that he's trolling. He listed Austin as probable on the injury report. Now, this is a man that's also been fined for not taking the injury report seriously, so I don't know what to make of that. I'm going to operate like he's playing, but I am telling you, my boss is like very much, he doesn't think he's playing.
Yeah, I think this is gamesmanship. From
that's where I am, but again, he covers the team every day.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that there is some fear, concern, worry about Austin Simmons' health, not only this week, but long term, because you're not talking about a 230-pound Jackson Dart. You're talking about a much more slender, smaller player who they do ask to use his legs. And over the course of the season, a player like that is going to run into health issues. I mean, we've seen it already with Austin Simmons. But there were a couple things on Saturday night. One, he never left the field. He was walking the sideline. That's part of the reason why I left the press box with 5 minutes left, because I knew I was writing about Austin Simmons, and I wanted to go and find him and get eyes on him and see how he looked. He had his helmet. He looked fine. He was walking up and down the sideline. Then after the game, he was one of the last players off the field. He was jogging. He was smiling. If you have any sort of structural damage to your ankle or your knee or whatever it is, you're not going to be jogging and laughing and smiling, at 30 minutes after the injury transpires. So, I've seen enough to believe that like he is able to play. Now, do they make the decision to hold him out as a precaution? I mean, I guess they could. I'd be surprised though. This is an SEC game, a losable SEC game, and one in which you're probably going to have to score a fair number of points to keep up with Taylen Green in Arkansas. So if I had to bet on it, I would say Austin Simmons does play. But again, I mean, I'm not there every day, so I don't know what he's looked like in their media viewing portions of practice and what people are saying. But, I saw a man on Saturday night in Lexington with my own eyes who, one, could have gone back in that football game, and two, looked healthy enough to play this week.
I have flagged Austin though for early onset jaw. Might be
That's
a drama queen on the injuries.
Yeah, great way to put it.
Yeah, that also in the night window. God, bangers only. We got Texas A&M at Notre Dame. We also have LSU Florida, and we have Diego taking on South Carolina. I mean, personal challenge game. Diego versus Lenora Sellers, like. One of these guys I believe in, and it's Diego. The other's Lenora Sellers. So which of those three games interests you the most?
This is what we live for, man. This Saturday night window is so good.
What time does Rosie go to bed? I'm already trying to like be like, can we push bedtime to like, what do we think? Halftime's going to be like 7:30-ish?
Yeah, go wake your daughter up super early on Saturday so she'll be really tired by the time these games start.
Well, I just want to push bedtime to like halftime.
Oh, okay, I got you. Well, that might work. Yeah,
but
I think
Malia's taken Josephine to Cooper Young Fest, so I am worried. I'm worried she is going to be tired and like I'm going to be missing like a lot of game time here.
Well, I have to live blog Florida LSU. So that'll be my primary screen. But honestly, I think the one that probably interests me most is Texas A&M Notre Dame. Because if Texas A&M goes into South Bend, takes down Notre Dame, we're going to start talking about Marcel Reed as a Heisman Trophy candidate. We're going to do the same thing we always do with A&M and start putting them in the playoff conversation way too early. And then we're going to do the same thing we did with Notre Dame last season and completely write them off when the rest of their schedule is actually pretty manageable. So either of those, like either of the outcomes here would be interesting to me. Notre Dame beating Texas A&M would then kind of, at least for the time being, get Texas A&M out of this upper middle class in the SEC that looks really crowded right now, because Oklahoma, Auburn, Missouri, Texas A&M, they've all looked pretty good so far, but they can't all be good, right?
No.
And if Texas A&M goes up to South Bend and loses by 20, then we can go ahead and kind of write them out of that category.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's this, I don't know what either team is. Like, I did not leave Labor Day Monday night thinking Notre Dame stinks.
Me neither.
And I was like, man, I just left thinking like, man, Miami up front looks incredible. And the fact that CJ Carr, I thought of a lot of the young quarterbacks, the moment didn't look too big for him. Like, I know his numbers were just kind of eh, but I was just talking about the way he played. I was pretty impressed with him. I mean, I know he had the one interception. It's like, whatever. Like, he was poised throughout the entire game in a game that would have been really easy to get rattled in.
He honestly kind of reminded me of Gunnar Stockton late last season. Like, yeah. Not going to go out and beat the world for you, but, like, you know, knows how to
could
play.
Drive the bus. Like, could
yeah,
drive
yeah,
the
yeah. bus. A gritty gamer with a high football IQ. Yeah, yeah.
This was interesting to me. Are you ready for this note? Over the last 2 years, SEC teams following a loss, 18-5 against the spread. SEC teams following a home loss were 9-0 against the spread. Only, however, two of those teams won. It would be hilarious if Florida did this. Lose to South Florida, go back into Baton Rouge on Saturday night and pull that off.
It would be. And LSU looked really bad in week two against Louisiana Tech. So this is possible.
Also, this was a fun one. Do you know A&M under Elko, 3-12 against the spread? Notre Dame under Marcus Freeman's 31-13 as a favorite. Also, the Irish are 4-0 at home as a home favorite of 7 points or fewer. This is a game that is the game that you could tell me any result, and I think I'd buy it. If you told me A&M went in there and won by two scores or more, okay, I can see a world. If you tell me that it's a close game that either team wins, I can see that. And if you tell me that maybe the A&M hype like dies early and that it's Notre Dame at home at night, a venue that they don't see, and they get going, I buy that too.
Yeah, I think there's at least a decent chance that Notre Dame defense shows up and really.
Well, and I don't know how real it is or isn't, but A&M's gotten run on a little bit this year.
Yeah, well, and Notre Dame has to run the football. They didn't run the football against Miami. You've got a Heisman Trophy candidate in Jeremiah Love, and then Jadarian Price is like a fantastic, you know, second punch there at running back, but they didn't get going against Miami. They abandoned the run in the second half against Miami. So you got to think, coming off of a bye at 0-1 at home at night against an SEC opponent, you're going to get Notre Dame's best shot here. But that's why it would be so interesting to me if Texas A&M could take that punch and come out and somehow win that game. Because then, I think the hype would be justified. I know we do it every year with Texas A&M, but there's no more. You cannot explain away or downplay or denigrate the significance of going on the road to South Bend against a good Notre Dame team and winning in that situation. So either outcome would be, I think, very instructive as to what to expect from both of these teams moving forward. Whereas, like, the other games on Saturday night are all interesting in their own ways, but in terms of one that has the most national significance and sort of the ability to teach us something about two important teams, it's Texas A&M Notre Dame.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric joins us next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM.
ARC Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARC machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
ESPN. That music means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer to the program. He is Eric Hasseltine. Eric, over at ESPN, Chris Herring and Kevin Pelton. Kevin Pelton, a longtime guest of your program.
Yeah, KP.
They've ranked the 14 newcomers. 14 new, new faces with new, old face but new place.
Right.
Number one they list is Kevin Durant with the Rockets. Too high, too low, just right.
I don't know. I mean, hard to argue with that. It depends on who number two is.
I guess, so this would be my question. So two is actually Dez. Dez with Orlando.
Pretty solid.
Three is Cam Johnson with the Nuggets.
Yeah.
Four is Mike Brown with the Knicks. Five,
who?
Mike Brown going to the Knicks as a coach. Yeah, that was their first.
I was thinking player the whole time.
That was the first tongue-in-cheek one. Five, DeAndre Ayton to the Lakers. Six was Miles Turner.
I'm never going to be a DeAndre Ayton guy.
He's one of my biggest draft misses of all time. I thought that guy was so athletic in college that he'd be able to. I mean, he's been fine, but.
He can be great. I just don't think he wants to play basketball. And that's a big key.
Yeah.
It doesn't appear that he loves playing basketball or cares about being great.
I was saying, unfortunately for him, that's his job. Six is Miles Turner. Seven is Kristaps with the Hawks, not the Falcons. Eight is Cooper Flagg to the Mavericks.
He would make a hell of a tight end, though.
Yeah, he would. You know for a fact. Oh, for sure.
Willie Cauley-Stein used to play high school football.
A red zone threat. Eight is Cooper Flagg with the Mavs. Nine is Norm Powell to the Heat. 10 is Jalen Green to the Suns. 11, Ty Jerome to the Grizz. 12 was Bradley Beal to the Clippers. 13, Dylan Harper to the Spurs. And 14 was VJ Edgecombe to the Sixers.
Okay. I would, going back through that list, I would probably rank Cooper Flagg higher.
Okay.
I think the Ty Jerome thing could be higher than that for the Grizzlies because it gives them a true point guard now to back up Ja and really three guards that can play. They're interchangeable at the one and can play alongside one another too. Now the question becomes what happens at the two? Is it, you know, mostly KCP? Is it mostly, Jalen Wells, does he move over there and Caldwell Pope plays the three? I don't know how that works. I mean, you basically have Caldwell Pope and Wells handling the two and three with, with your backups, your rookie, and, forgive me for just getting out of eye surgery and maybe being a little groggy. I'm blanking. Cedric Callard.
It's tough when you have, like, all the names. Like, come on. It's off the top of the dome.
Yeah. So I might put him higher. I would certainly put Cooper Flagg higher. I think the Norman Powell and Miami one could be huge. I really think Powell can play. I mean, it's crazy to me, how you have to make those decisions. Like, a Clippers have to make that decision to move on from him after he had a career year there. So, but I think he's terrific. And, he's got that kind of dog in him, that toughness, that I'm going to get in your face type attitude, but he can really shoot it. So yeah, no, I mean, the Mike Brown one, I'll be interested to see that one. That could be tragically overrated, could actually be tragically underrated if they go and have a big time season.
I've told George this. See if you agree, because you know the man better than I do. I've always thought Mike Brown is a lot like basketball Buck Showalter. If you need it for like 18 months, I think it works, but it has like a clear shelf life, and it's not going to be a long-term fix, but it can be better in the short term.
Yes. Here's the thing. I would totally agree with you, but I think he's changed. I was not a Mike Brown guy.
A softer Mike Brown?
No, I think he's adapted. Being very close to some people still in Sacramento who talked about how he operated and the things he was trying to do. Now, the track record is such that he gets sideways with his leaders, guards, you know. I guess you could call LeBron more of a guard at that time, but, you know, in Cleveland, and the game hadn't evolved the way it has now, you look at those scores and you're like, okay, dude, you're scoring 89 points a game and you have LeBron James in his prime. LeBron James could get half of that on his own if you just let him go, just let him rip. But he was a defensive guy. He came from the Spurs. It didn't really work for him and a couple other stops. And then with Sacramento, he kind of loosened the reins a little bit. But still, at the end of the day, De'Aaron Fox was who got him basically, you know, from my understanding, was kind of the guy that got sideways and got him, you know, let go. Now, whether that's all De'Aaron Fox, whether that's Mike Brown, we never truly know these things, because I know a couple of coaches that I thought were 100% player guys, and Todd Field said the players were done with him. And I'm like, that is shocking, because I've never known that guy to be anything but a player's coach. So these things, and in today's age, you know, who is also getting in these players' ears, heads? Yeah. There's so much influence of you're not getting yours. I mean, we go back to what we talked about last week with the Kawhi Leonard thing. One of the biggest gripes about Kawhi Leonard is that the people around Kawhi Leonard are the ones that are causing the most problems with Kawhi Leonard, like in terms of his attitude, that convince him, hey, you don't have to do this, or you shouldn't do that, or you shouldn't do this. And I've heard that, and I hear it from other people. And, you know, we hear it right here when they talk about Ja. Anytime anybody asks me about Ja, oh, man, his dad's got to get out of his way. And I'm like, you know, in reality, I don't think that's accurate. I think the fact is that he likes having his dad around, and I don't have a big problem with that. I think the person that's got to help Ja out the most is Ja. Ja's got to, you know, do his thing and be, you know, be an adult. And so, you know, Mike Brown, I think, is a guy that fits the right systems. It's wild to me that a team makes the conference finals and has thrived under a guy. And I know he can be tough to deal with. Believe me, I've heard all the stories about Tom Thibodeau and places celebrating when he was let go, not being upset, going, wow, can't thank God he's not here anymore. However, he wins. He won in Chicago. He won in Minnesota. And he won in New York. And so to make the conference finals and let somebody go, that's crazy. So I think Mike Brown will do well there, because he's got a roster that's pretty solid. And a lot of people pointed the roster. They said they gave you everything you needed to do to get to the finals, and you lose to the Indiana Pacers. I'm like, all right, well, you know, the Pacers were on one of those runs that happens, and they're really good. And they were really good last year, too. It's not like they lost to, you know, the Nets and got bounced in the first round. So that's a tough spot to be in, and we'll see if he can connect to the players. And you know, again, there were rumors there that maybe Jalen Brunson was sideways with Thibodeau, and that's why the move was made too. So I do believe this, and John Calipari said it best, and he said it a lot while he was here. He said, if you do not have your star player on your side 100% and going to the owner and saying, this is my guy, you are in the crosshairs every day. And it doesn't matter how successful you're being. If your star player wavers at all, no matter how much you win, you've got a problem. And he said he lost Stephon Marbury and when he was the coach of the Nets, and the Nets were, you know, a 500 team, and boom, or whoever was his star player at that time. I don't want to say it was Marbury. It might have been. I thought it was, though, maybe. I can't remember. But he lost them. And despite the fact that they were a 500 basketball team, the Nets, who aren't exactly known for being, you know, perennial powerhouse, said, we're gonna go a different direction. In the end, it worked out for Cal. He comes back to the college ranks and builds a Hall of Fame resume. And, you know, in the end for the Nets, they're still the Nets, right?
Indeed, they are.
No matter how hard they try.
Yeah,
no
I was saying, now, despite their, like, it is amazing how many different ways they can figure out to still being the Nets. Like, they've tried to do just about every possible path, and they kind of wind up here.
It's crazy to me. Like, I look at that. I was thinking about this the other day. I don't, and I can't remember exactly why I was, but some teams, just like, you can try and push every button. It's not like the Nets haven't tried. I mean, the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce deal was dumb because they were at the tail ends of their career and you mortgaged the future thinking they had one good year left. Anytime a GM thinks, oh, they got one good year left, we could make it worth, that's a problem. That's going to be a big problem. Because the odds are that 1 year, if you think it is just 1 year, not two or three, but yeah, I can get one good year out of it, you're probably not going to do it. You're grasping. But then they went back out. They recovered after that. They got Kevin Durant. They got James Harden. They got all these guys. They signed these big-time players. And it still didn't work. It still wasn't enough. It still wasn't good enough for them to move on. They've had owners coming in willing to spend money. Mikhail Prokhorov was a guy who everybody thought, this guy's going to, you know, make Mark Cuban look like he's shopping at, you know, the bargain basement discount store and spending money on everything. Well, it turns out that Prokhorov was kind of a scumbag, but, you know, okay.
Eric, the term is Russian oligarch, please.
Well, you know, it turns out that, you know, when you're spending your money in ways that most places in America deem illegal, unless you're in certain counties of Nevada, it doesn't go over well with everybody.
He might be familiar with a ranch that has a lot of bunnies.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly him and Dennis. What was it, Dennis Hoffs, who had that? Who had that place? Yeah, they probably were on a first name basis, but they've had guys in there willing to spend money, and they've got a beautiful arena, and they're in the biggest market in America. I mean, Brooklyn is in New York, like New York City, like it's one of the five boroughs, and they've always kind of been the little brother because they were in New Jersey before, but they have a very, very loyal fan base out there. But for whatever reason, they just can't get it done. So it's crazy to me. So you try to push all these buttons and it doesn't always work. And that's the one thing I've always said about the Knicks. I'm like, I get they are in Madison Square Garden. I get they are a bell cow because they're the Knicks, but let's not act like the Knicks have been a juggernaut franchise that has won a ton. They are a bell cow franchise because they're one of the oldest and longest. They haven't hung a banner in there, I think, since before I was born. I think it was 71.
I was going to say, is it 71, 72? I can't Phil Jackson played on the team.
Yeah, I think it was – I want to say it was either 71 or 72, but 71 was what I thought. But I was born
I'm trusting
72.
You because you've gone to the building.
Yeah, and – you know, there was the same way with the New York Rangers.
None of us. They won in 70 and 73.
Yeah, 73. Okay, so I was 6 months old. 7 months old. Yeah. Nobody's seen it. Nobody has seen that. And yet we talk about them like, oh, man, everybody wants to go play for the Knicks. I'm like, eh, do they? Do they? They do because it's New York. But at the end of the day, like when they were chasing LeBron – it's not like you're going, hey, it's the Lakers. Hey, it's the Celtics. Hey, it's even the Bulls who still have those memories of Michael Jordan. And since Michael Jordan, no, they have not gone to an NBA Finals. Fair enough. But they've been the number one seed. They've been up there, and the Knicks have too. But it's more recent thinking of Michael Jordan. And they're another one where the Bulls now are getting into that realm. Like, hey, we're starting to talk about 30 years since you won a title. And we're talking about 30 years since you've been in a finals, and the Knicks are in that group too. And you're like, are you truly like a top tier franchise? And we get shocked when other franchises get to the finals ahead of them. Miami to me is the enigma, because you cannot tell me being down there that it's not tailor made to recruit players down there. To get players to come down there.
Maybe they're trying to recruit with the wrong things. Maybe South Beach isn't quite the sell that, I don't know, maybe a $28 million no-shop job is.
Well, that's true. There you go. So how do we even the playing surface? So, yeah, there's a lot of things at play there. But also, I think maybe Pat Riley isn't a guy that wants to, you know, wants to listen to what a superstar has to say. And so it can be up there too. So, yeah, man, it's that list is interesting, but is the original part of this. But there's so many things that go into play of building a roster that can win. I mean, who would have looked at Indiana at the beginning of the year last year and gone, yep, I have no, you know, I have no doubt they're an Eastern Conference semifinal team, probably Eastern Conference finals, but really could make a run. You're like, hey, they're good. They're one of those mid-range teams. They're good. But when they caught their run and when they played together and when they played under a coach who got the most out of them, they made their run. It you know, helped that they, you know, caught a banged-up Cavaliers team for a couple of games. But, you know, that's part of it. And I hate when people discount wins because guys weren't playing. They did that to the Grizzlies the year they got to, you know, the Eastern Conference Finals because, oh, if Russell Westbrook is playing – they wouldn't have beat the Thunder. I'm like, if you go back and look at the regular season, they beat them twice with them. It would have been a different series. It wouldn't have been over in five. I don't think I would agree with that, but don't just discredit it. And, you know, you had a particular announcer for another team who shall remain nameless, a team, though, that we hated that used to be called Lob City. Mm. Yeah, come out on one of their TV broadcasts and say, you know, after his analyst, said, you know, they're a good team. They did this. He goes, oh, that was a fluke. They were lucky. They wouldn't have gone anywhere if Manu Ginobili had been healthy. Mm. And I'm like, excuse me? That was after the first playoff win. I'm like, excuse me? Manu Ginobili played in five of the six games. And funny story about that guy. When he retired, and I got a letter from the Clippers, an email that said, hey, he'd really like to come on your show and talk about his career and what the, you know, what the
talk about himself.
Yeah. Of what the rivalry between the two teams meant and how fun it was for him. And, you know, just kind of go over a Hall of Fame 40-year career. And I said, I literally remember asking my boss, and they also reached out to Brad Carson. And I said, I'm going to ask you straight and you can be honest with me. Do I have to have him on my show?
Yeah.
And Brad's like, absolutely not. And the team said, absolutely not. And I said, well, then politely decline.
Yeah.
And I said, by the way, can you add in the note, do they realize who they're asking? Our fans don't want to
correct. Like,
yeah, nobody likes the Clippers here. Maybe a few stragglers. But for the most part, our fans would be like, why are you having the Clippers guy? The biggest day in
ARC Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARC machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at how I met your mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.